You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right, like the dude just said. Yes. Yes, I am back. Thank you very much to Sean Sullivan for giving me an opportunity to be in our state's capital yesterday for some major meetings that I was a part of, making a presentation and doing some things that were important. But yeah, Sean Sullivan on the show yesterday from FM Talk 106.5, and I certainly appreciate him doing that. As I was getting ready today, I don't remember what it was that reminded me, but I was thinking about somebody I knew that I'm going to tell you about here in just a minute. But I spent a number of my years in the military on jump status as a paratrooper. And I was a qualified jump master, meaning that I was often responsible for some aspect of the airborne operations that my unit conducted, whether on the ground as the departure area control officer or in the aircraft to conduct final inspections and outside air safety checks and put paratroopers out the door on target to hit the drop zone. It was high adventure, and there's memories that I'll not soon forget. And I got to tell you, the amount of time spent preparing for each drop is, generally speaking, a by-the-book, safety-oriented, step-by-step sequence of events. Very controlled. Every single jumper had to go through pre-jump training, jump master briefs, departure area briefs, practice actions in the aircraft, but perhaps most importantly were the rehearsals of how to land and what to do in the event of a parachute malfunction. I mean, we used to always say with a dark humor, anyone can fall out of a perfectly good airplane. It's how you land that makes a difference. Very true. Very, very true. So these were all static line jumps, meaning that there was a cloth static line hooked to the back of the main parachute harness, which the jumper wore on his back. The other end of the static line was clipped and secured to a steel cable inside the aircraft. And when the jumper exited the aircraft, whether it be a fixed wing or rotary wing, the static line would stretch out to its full length. And when it hit the end, it would basically just jerk the jumper's parachute out of its pack tray. And I'm going to tell you right now, the chute shock from some of those jumps, whoo, especially when the Air Force pilots didn't bother to slow down to proper jump speed. Some of you out there in this audience know who you are. But I could give you some stories about serious whiplash if you didn't keep your chin tucked down tight to your chest when you jumped. But every jumper actually has two parachutes, a main and a reserve. The main is the one on the back the static line is hooked to. The reserve chute is right in front, strapped to the jumper's front waist area. Once you leave the bird, every jumper is supposed to count for that requisite number of seconds, usually 4 to 6 seconds, depending on what kind of aircraft. You literally leave the aircraft going 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. And if you don't feel that massive chute shock, you've got an immediate decision to make. Pull the reserve. When we jumped in training, the usual minimum safe altitude was 800 feet above ground level. So we would typically jump between 800 and 1,200 feet in training, depending upon the weather conditions and all that kind of stuff. If you were loaded down with combat equipment, and if the air was cold and you had a big breakfast, you could expect to be in the air for maybe 30 to 40 seconds, which can feel like forever, really. But if your main parachute didn't deploy and you were in a terminal fall, you had mere seconds to get that reserve chute deployed. So we trained over and over and over on what to do. When to pull the reserve handle, how to pull the reserve's handle, how to land under reserve chute over and over and over. It was ingrained to the point that it was supposed to be muscle memory. I can't ever imagine jumping static line without that fat reserve chute strapped to my midsection. It was that extra measure of confidence. It could mean life or death, really. So back in the 80s, I mentioned a minute ago there was a guy I knew, right? Back in the 80s, early 90s, when I was a young lieutenant, we had a sergeant in my unit who was revered by the men. He had been a ranger instructor, and before that, he had served with the 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment. His uniform looked like a South American dictator. I mean, wow. At a time when most troops had never been to war, he sported a ranger tab, combat infantryman's badge, a Bronze Star for valor, a Purple Heart, and very notably, he had a rare set of combat jumpmaster wings, meaning that on the middle of his jumpmaster wings, there was a gold star that signified to the world that he had actually parachuted into combat. In 1983, President Reagan initiated Operation Urgent Fury when Marxist rebels took a number of U.S. citizens hostage on the island nation of Grenada. This sergeant that I'm talking about, this friend of mine, he jumped into Grenada with 1st Ranger Battalion. But on that mission I just told you about, the protocols for safe static line jumping, they went out the window. I mean, all protocols changed when contact was made with the enemy. The Rangers were scheduled to conduct an air-land seizure of a major airfield to prepare for the next wave of U.S. forces from the 82nd Airborne. But en route to the landing site, it was learned the enemy had placed obstructions all over the runway, making it impossible to land. And then to make things worse, heavy anti-aircraft and weather conditions were making it difficult, and the first pass of Rangers that hit the ground came into immediate contact with the enemy. So with 20 minutes notice, the jump masters on board yelled that there were Rangers in contact on the ground and that all personnel in the birds were switching to a parachute assault. And while they were flying, they switched to what's known as an in-flight rig and began putting on their parachutes. No time for jump master inspections, none of the usual safety protocols, nobody done any rehearsals, and then came the announcement that to avoid enemy fire, they were going to exit the aircraft at under 500 feet, which would only give them a few seconds in the air. So with little time under canopy, you know, the decision was made. Save time on rigging the equipment. We don't have much time in the plane anyway. The Rangers decided to jump without their reserve chutes. This was an all-in moment, y'all. Static line is hard. Static line in combat is harder. Static line in combat at 450 feet with no reserve is virtually unheard of. I know Rangers who told me they broke out every single rule. One guy watched his buddy take a belt of M60 ammo, load his machine gun in the plane, and jump out the door with it hanging around his neck. Everything they did was all in, no reserve. Why am I telling you all this? What's my point? Well, part of it's history. It's a mission that I think is almost lost to time now. People have forgotten the incredible bravery that went on in that battle. But the other part is the level of commitment these men exhibited. When they heard their brothers in arms were in contact on the ground and in need of immediate relief, that changed the entire dynamic. It meant they were willing and able to exit a perfectly good airplane with tracer rounds in the air below a generally accepted safe jump altitude into a hot drop zone with no reserve. No reserve meant no extra personal safety. No reserve meant no way out. No reserve was a total commitment to whatever would happen. I am personally tired of the constant haranguing of progressive left-wing liberals that celebrate and accentuate and even mandate the decline of a no-reserve mentality. Make no mistake that appeasement and avoidance only invite bad actors to act badly. Whether it be on the world stage in the presence of a near-peer adversary or at the local school board meeting or in the Walmart parking lot, we need folks who have a no-reserve mentality. I celebrate when I come across stories of men and women who are willing to go to hard places and do hard things, and I think that despite the overreaching attempts of the left to denigrate the American spirit and to water down standards, that the vast majority of Americans feel, as I do, that what made us a great nation was the blessings of an almighty God and a controlled recklessness in our attitudes, a willingness to do whatever it took, no reserve. God bless those who are willing to go all in when they're needed, who can hear that troops are in contact or friends are in need or communities need voices or churches need volunteers, and they can pivot from the plan that they thought they had and be willing to jump in feet first with a no-reserve attitude. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, I'm going to tell you, my friend, that sergeant who jumped in with 1st Ranger Battalion, he had several stories, and they were worth telling. They were good ones. I'll tell you another one in a minute. It involved President Ronald Reagan. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back.